being sceptical, but there's some security in having a mech hanger in your bag.
You can pack your ginsters into your tube and cook it as you go on the way around.
How much?
I wouldn't like to be peeling it off afterwards.
I'm aware of my non-qualification to join in this discussion, and I'm trying to keep quiet.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, welcome to Single Track World podcast. I'm Hannah Dobson. Also here we have...
Mark, that's me.
And Amanda.
Well, here we are. So let's do a little bit of a news roundup. We've got to come an interview from Mark's trip to Utah on a giant launch, which he is finally allowed to talk about. That's going to come at the end. But for now, let's talk about the news. So Mark, the news this week.
The news this week has been, well, certainly in our sphere in the office, it's been one of launches. So many bite launches this week, not only in the same week but on the same day and within hours of each other. So we've had, what have we had? The first one that went out was Canyon's Neuron. So the new Canyon Neuron launch went out. This was it Tuesday or Wednesday?
It's Tuesday.
It was Tuesday,
yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah. That was followed just a couple of hours later by, wasn't a bite launch, was it? It was the SRAM Axis Eagle. That was really popular story. That went absolutely nuts. Because this is SRAM's sort of a trickle-down process, isn't it? Their wireless group set trickling down to a different level and coming out.
Well, no, this is the new thing at the top.
Oh, right. Have I got that totally wrong?
You got it totally wrong. Right, well, pay attention. This is the new thing at the top that we're going to wait for it to trickle down. So this is all the UDH stuff that's been going on, the Universal Derailleur Hanger that's been out there. That's been so that you can have bikes that will be compatible with this new SRAM Eagle, which does away with that little bit of fragile hanger and actually bolts directly onto the bike. So it's strong, is the idea. You can get lots of videos out there of people standing on their rear mechs now.
This piece of tech, this rear hanger, finally it's disappearing, it's going away, isn't just restricted to Axis, is it? Because it's also on the new Neuron. The video that Benji did actually shows the new kind of bolt-on attachment for the rear hanger. So it isn't just an Axis thing, this new hanger.
No, so a hanger is a hanger that it matches up with other bits of derailleur. But then if your bike frame is compatible with the new Eagle, then it will also be UDH compatible. And so you take that hanger, that universal hanger that has been out there for a while, you take that out and instead you slot in this new Eagle thing. So it has a slightly different chain line. It bolts in to the chainstay, but then it doesn't bolt all the way through. It doesn't go through your axle. And so you need to have a frame that is compatible with this particular setup so that the chain lines and everything work right.
Does part of the compatible frame include it being stronger, because you don't have a nice flimsy mech to snap if you have a major impact? I'm being skeptical, but there's some security in having a mech hanger in your bag.
Well, Sram says that it's so strong down there that it's fine. You're not going to smash your chainstays off. I do wonder whether we may find out whose chainstays are stronger than others in time. But yeah, that's remains to be seen.
Universal derailleur hanger. Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. So an unintended consequence of UDH is it's going to free up so much space on the walls of bike shops and workshops. Because for years, bike shops have had a poster sent to them every year from somebody in the bike, probably Madison or something like that. I've seen one that was literally almost A1 in size. And it was just covered in every different gear hanger on the market. With all the details and the codes under it, so that you know you could reference any bike and go, right, well, this is this hanger that's on the fourth column across and the 17th row down, and that's the hanger we need. The UDH is just going to get rid of that completely.
Yeah, and so that has been in the industry for a while now and being filtering through. But as I understand it, just because you can use that particular hanger doesn't necessarily mean your frame is quite compatible with the new Eagle. And there's a list of 200 or more and growing frames that are compatible with the new Eagle. But because some of the clearances are slightly different and the chain line is slightly different. So it's a whole world of engineering. It's a package that goes together. You can't kind of mix and match bits. And ultimately, not only is it strong, but you also can shift under load. So the whole of the cassette is laid out in a specific way so that it kind of pushes the chain up or down, like facilitates that movement as you go round. And it also doesn't have all of those fiddly little high and low and B screw things that I have to look up on YouTube every time because I can't get them straight in my head. It has a red ring and you put it in the red ring and then you set it up and then you can use the little access buttons for fine tuning, but that's about it. So it's supposed to be much easier to set up and then more robust once it's there. And you can just keep pedaling and hauling and not worry about when you shift.
I need that. I always forget, you know, and you sort of go down a dip and then you're halfway up the other side and realise that I've forgotten to shift.
We have a lot of that round here as well, don't we? Because we have a lot of like steep drop, steep up, and you can't see it coming kind of thing. So yeah, Benji is not one to have his head turned by trinkets and bling, but he's quite impressed with this, isn't he?
So. Yeah, the old cynic. Yeah. Anyway, if you want to read all the details on that, then head over to our website because it's a good story. Yeah. So that was only the second of the launches on Wednesday.
Yeah.
The third one was 4 p.m. Wednesday, and that was the new Giant. I tell you, this model really rolls off the tongue. Let's see if I can remember it without my notes. I mean, I was there. The Giant Trans X Advanced E Plus Elite Model Zero. That's its full title. Just rolls off the tongue.
And is the Model Zero the bottom of the range or the top of the range?
Oh, just to confuse things, no, that's the top of the range.
Okay.
Yeah.
So go on, tell us, what's the entry model price point, you know?
The entry, well, this is the carbon range. There's going to be an alloy range.
Do we know when?
No, I've not got any information on when the alloy version is coming. I do know something about the alloy version, but basically there's four carbon models. And the carbon models are what we've kind of termed low-fat e-bikes. The battery is 400 watt-hours, which is verging on full-fat. When e-bikes first came out, that was close to being the maximum. Now that's considered kind of low fat. So the new battery is on the carbon ones is 400 watt hours. The motor is a full fat motor. It's a Yamaha 85 Newton meters motor, but you can tune the torque on it down to as low as 20 Newton meters. Now that's torque, not power. These are different things. You can change. You can limit the power on it just like you can with other motors, but you can also actually adjust the torque. Basically, you think of the torque adjustment as you can limit the acceleration. So rather than, you know, in its low torque model, you could put it into boost and you pedal and you won't get that surge of power.
And can you do all of that for every bike in the carbon range?
Yes. every right. bike in the carbon range, and you'll be able to do that for the bikes in the alloy range, as I understand it. The difference between okay. the carbon and the alloys is the alloys are actually going to be full fat. They're going to have an 800 watt hour battery on them. The really impressive thing about the carbon model that we rode was that it weighed in. Now, this is the manufacturer's claim, because I was only on a 2-day launch and we didn't get to weigh them ourselves. And we haven't had one here in the office yet, but it weighed in at 18.8 kilos, which is remarkably light for an e-bike, which was down to the battery tech. Now, I went in the story that I launched on Wednesday, I went into great details about these new fancy batteries that they've got, because these batteries that are in the Giant bike made by Panasonic are a new generation of rechargeable batteries that we're probably going to start seeing in everything from e-bikes to electric cars. And they are more powerful in terms of how much energy they can discharge than the batteries that are in Tesla cars.
And it's just made me think the next feature that we need for e-bikes is you can pack your Ginstas into your tube and cook it as you go on the way around.
Well, you probably could. You can't see when you look at it is the fact that all the weight is really low down. And that's because the battery is much more compact. So there's more energy density going on with the battery. So the down tube, when you look at this new Giant Advanced Trans X Elite E Plus whatever.
Zero.
There's actually a lot of space. There's the down tube, I think there's a third of it is empty space at the top. It's not full of battery, the down tube. So that's kind of impressive. I was impressed by it, and I've got an interview at the end of this podcast with the chief engineer of Giant, Joost Bakker, and sat down with him in Utah in an echoey room, and talked about what the thinking was behind it. So hang on at the end, and you'll get that interview.
Now, in the middle of all of that, on that launch day, there was actually a launch that we didn't write about until Thursday, because there were so many launches that day. There was also the 3D printed titanium E-wings for e-bikes.
I've missed cranks. That.
Yeah, which I think were about £1,500 for the cranks. But yeah, if you want to bling your e-bike,
just for the
there you go.
Just for the forum listeners, can I just say it? How much? Oh, by the way, the answer to your question, the lowest carbon model of that Giant was actually about £6,000.
Okay.
And the one that we were riding was 13,000. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I did say 13,000 English pounds.
And let's do the how much?
How much? Again,
because that's a handy little segue, actually, to one of the stories that's on the site this week, which was more of an opinion piece. It's under the members' stories. There was a shirt manufacturer called Gitzbo that ceased to exist this week, and they're in America. And I've written about why I think that it is sad that a company that makes shirts that cost more than £200 is no more. So,
yeah.
How much?
You need to.
Nice shirts, though.
They are. Well, they are. Yeah. They are nice shirts, aren't they?
So they are shirts and other cycling apparel that are made in a town in America. And they were trying to make the product there on site. They're trying to help regenerate the town as part of that. They created a bunch of jobs there, employed people in manufacturing jobs. They built new trails there, and trying to pay people a living wage that are making them, and trying to show that you can make products like on home soil, if you like, and environmentally friendly. it's not worked out, which I think is sad, because I like to see people trying to do stuff in ways that is an alternative form of capitalism, perhaps.
And it's interesting, all of this week it did throw up a few comments, some expected and understandable comments about the price of stuff. And I think we did actually come in. My launch story of this Giant e-bike, this £13,000 e-bike, did get some comments about why are they so expensive? Why are we not reviewing stuff that is more reasonably priced? And it's a very fair comment. The one thing I did say in the comments was that when we go on these launches, the brands understandably want to show off the model. And to do that to a whole bunch of journalists you've just flown in from all around the world, they put us on the top level thing. You know, if you imagine if there was a motoring journalist, motoring magazine, and Jaguar's launching a new car. They're going to stick them in the top end bike, and that's kind of what happens in the bike industry. We're aware of that, and so when we come back from these launches, we always say to the manufacturers, when is there going to be a test sample of this bike that we can have back on our own soil, on our own trails, that we can give a good thrashing to? And we're on the list to get one of these bikes, but we always say to them, is there any chance you can not send us the top level model? We usually kind of, our preference is to get like a mid-range model.
Well, and indeed, that Canyon launch bike that we've got, the Neuron, we've got the AL6, which is £2,249.
Yes.
For a full suspension bike, which seems like
it's a much more
achievable amount of money.
It's easy to look, when launches happen, it's easy to look at them and just see the headline prices. Those are always usually the top of the, you know, top spec ones, and there are price points that go all the way down. So even these carbon range of these e-bikes, yes, it starts, the carbon 3 version of this giant long titled e-bike starts at 6,000, which is still a crazy amount of money, but for, you know, for an e-bike, for being the lowest entry point. But the alloy ones are going to answer the lower price points, and that's, they're going to come in. As soon as we've got more information on those, we'll get that out to you.
So, Amanda, what's your news from this week?
My news is a follow-up on my last week's news. So I mentioned about Kristen Faulkner being disqualified from the Strada Bianchi for wearing a glucose monitor. But I'd only just read about it and was a bit sort of still trying to work it out or process it. But there's quite a lot of news articles, and she confirmed in every way possible to the UCI that she didn't have it turned on. And obviously I feel bad for her, but it's like she's taken one for the team being women in sport, that it needed something to happen to draw their attention to it, to talk about women's health in sport. So she's come out to say she's basically lost her period in the past, and it's only from using this glucose monitor that she's actually been able to get a hold of her health and get her period back naturally, and not being able to use one. Like, I've lost mine from going to Spain. It was just, it's simply, you do too much and you don't fuel properly. Like, I just think, eat until I'm full and that should do the job, but apparently it hasn't done. And I've lost it when I've done a load of XC racing or when I first started road riding. And it's just a really fragile balance. And if you've got a tool that can help you be healthy, then you should be able to use it. So it seems like she's sort of fought back, but not in that she wants the third place back, more she wants the UCI to look into it, and has been quite vocal about the fact it's, you know, it's mostly male run and they need to just acknowledge that women's bodies are different and they have different needs, and it's a really important thing. If you've got this tool that can help, don't stop them from using it. So although it's a bad thing for her, something good may come of it, because it has highlighted that there is something on the market that they might need to consider allowing.
Okay.
Also, I have reached out to is it Super Sapiens? Basically, I want to try it because I talk about it a lot, because it is such a prominent thing in my life, my cycle. And it's obviously, it's related to glucose levels and insulin and all that. So I've asked if I can test one. Because at this point, I've gone on a bikepacking trip for 2 weeks and was riding for about 8 hours a day, every day. And I've lost my period as a result of it. Can't be anything else that's caused it. And I don't actually know how you magic it back. I've just totally messed my cycle up. And I don't know what you do. Do you just wait, or do you use a tool?
We shall await your testing with interest.
Yeah. So I can see, people can't see our faces, but I just saw Mark hear me say, do you use a tool? I mean one that you've slapped onto your arm to measure your glucose levels, Mark. Not a rod or...
I'm aware of my non-qualification to join in this discussion. I'm trying to keep quiet.
Well, you have a female in your life that does sports, so...
It's true. No, I'm looking forward to you getting one of these things to test and learning more about it.
I'm just going to be walking around eating biscuits all the time, I think. That's my vision of having glucose levels available to me is, I need a digestive. There was a kid at my school that always had a pack of digestives with him and everyone was really jealous, primary school level. We didn't know he was diabetic. We just thought, why does he get to eat biscuits in assembly?
So on another, it's not on our site actually, I just saw it in social media, another women's racing thing. There's a South African mountain bike racer called Amy Wakefield, who's racing in the Absa Cape Epic. And she turned like a corner, scraped her arm on a tree and basically cut a massive hole in her arm. Oh my God.
The picture is hard to work out what you're looking at.
Yeah. But her and her teammate, it wasn't bleeding very much. So they just put some duct tape on it and she finished the race. She's absolutely hard as nails. So yeah, maybe don't go looking for that one on the internet if you're squeamish. But we all have tales of duct tape fixes, but that was quite an extreme one. Just halfway through her arm, basically, wasn't it?
I wouldn't like to be peeling it off afterwards. Like the worst version of pulling a plaster off a wound.
Ugh.
Duct tape that's holding your arm together.
Oh, right. On that note, shall we...
We're moving along because Mark's feeling faint.
Yes.
He hasn't had all his toast.
No, I've got a piece of toast here that's gone cold. And we were talking about this before we started, didn't we? I can't eat cold toast.
Have you got an air fryer? Warm it up.
Of course I've got an air fryer. Who doesn't have an air fryer? You can't work with Charlie and not be sold on how everyone should have an air fryer.
How first world is Mark? He's like, I can't eat cold toast, but I could warm it up in my air
fryer. Research purposes, go and reheat it in the air fryer.
It's got peanut butter on. Will that melt and make a mess? Right, mm-hmm. I'm going to stop talking about my breakfast now. And I think it's time to handle next week, hopefully. I want to point out, by the way, that this is yet another single track podcast that we've put out without Ross being on it. Ross is our ad guy, and I think we need a bit of a petition. I think we need some pressure from the listeners. We've been desperately for months trying to get Ross to come and help us out and join us on a podcast, because he honestly is I don't know how you describe his attitude to life.
Good value.
He's good value. Yes, that's it. He's good value. He'll be very good value in your ears, but he's refusing point blank to come on the podcast. So I think we need some pressure from the listeners. I'm going to start counting. This is yet another episode without Ross. Single track podcast. And on that note, I'm going to hand over to me, actually. This is what you're going to listen to now is me talking to the lead engineer of Giant, Joost Bakker, out in Utah, St. George, on the edge of the desert out there, about the new Giant e-bike launch. And I'm not going to try and remember the name of it again, and all the clever things that have gone into launching this bike. So over to me and Joost.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi guys, it's Mark here. I'm actually in Utah at the moment. So I've just had a 2-day launch
of a new Giant e-bike. And I'm sat here now with Giant's global category manager, Joost Bakker. I got that right.
So you got that absolutely perfect.
Fantastic. All right. So, I mean, first of all, what a place this is.
It's fantastic. It's beautiful to be out here.
Yeah. Very different from Holland.
Yes, it is indeed. Certainly as it is at the moment. Now, the bike itself, that, you know, is what everybody wants to get the information on. It's got a big title. It's got a snappy title. Do you want to give us the actual model, the complete model name of the bike we've just been riding?
So the complete model name, and that's a long one, so bear with me. That's the Trans X Advanced E Plus Elite. So it's a mouthful, for sure.
It is.
So in short, we typically say, okay, Trans X Elite.
Yeah.
That covers...
Trans X, I was going to ask you, how do you internally at Giant, how do
Trans
you...
Trans X Elite.
The yeah, Trans X Elite.
That
okay.
covers the basics. Yeah.
Excellent. Now, the Trans X Elite that we've been riding is a full carbon model.
Correct.
And it's an e-bike.
Yep.
It's got a Yamaha motor, because Giants always use Yamaha motors, isn't they?
We tend to say it's a Giant motor.
Right.
And similar, like how perhaps other brands use our production facility as production.
Yep.
We are gladly partnering with Yamaha, and they produce the motors for us. It's been co-developed, so it's truly been our engineers and their engineers developing a motor. And we share the platform. So they use the same hardware in the Yamaha system, and we use that same hardware in their production in the Giant system. So we truly treat it as a Giant motor, but it is indeed the same platform and shares the hardware with Yamaha.
Now, you pointed out there that you collaborate with the manufacturer, you know, with Yamaha. Now, that's different to, I mean, because all of our readers will be very familiar with the other mainstream motors in the market. So you've got your Shimano, you've got your Bosch. Now, because Giant collaborates with Yamaha, it's brought some advantages to the table in terms of design of the actual motor, hasn't it? Do you
Correct.
Want to just
Correct.
Give us a bit of an insight?
Yeah, that was an interesting one, because, of course, we get a very early peek of what their engineers are working on or thinking about, and they're the motor experts. We're just here to make a bike around it, basically. Yeah. And build a system around it with those components. So when seeing those first drafts, we basically went around and thought, well, maybe we could optimize that to work better with our bike and with our linkages, and making sure that the Maestro suspension linkage especially fits better into that motor. So really it was us asking their engineers, like, hey, what if you could move that part of the motor over there? What if, you know, moving parts around basically... to create a motor housing that works together with that Maestro link, so that we could build kind of like a system between motor and suspension,
yeah,
and build that as compact as possible.
So this is a bit like being able to go to Shimano or Bosch and saying, can you just make the motor this shape, please? Which you would get the answer, no.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So the benefit of working with Yamaha in that close relationship is, yes, your engineers can all work together and make the motor. And that's actually reduced the clearance, the ground clearance, hasn't it?
Correct, correct. Yeah, so that was a big leap forward, basically, from the previous motor to the current one. It's like inch and a half more ground clearance. So
that's fantastic. So moving on to the battery, because the battery is really quite interesting. Because I know this is a podcast, but I'm presuming that people who are listening to this, you're also looking at our website and you can see the pictures of this bike now. And I have to say, it's a gorgeous looking bike.
Thank you.
It doesn't look like an e-bike.
No, it doesn't, does it?
It doesn't. It looks slim. It looks compact. It's tremendous. Now, we call this a semi-skimmed e-bike, which means that it's not a full powered in terms of the capacity of the battery. As it's the battery capacity is 400 watt hours, is that correct?
That's correct.
And yet, the biggest semi-skimmed battery I've seen in other models, I think the Orbea Arise is 365, the Specialized Levo SL is 325, but you've managed to get this to 400, and yet the profile of this bike is really quite spectacular. That, how have you done that with the battery? The battery's different, isn't it?
Correct. We chose for a cell configuration, so each battery is built up of 20 cylindrical cells, like a small, almost like a...
They look like shotgun cartridges.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And so so we went for a configuration that's perhaps a little bit longer than you would see on other systems. And because we built it into our own frame, we can go as long as can fit, as long as we can still make an extra small size out of it, which is important for us for the, particularly for the live version of this bike. And so we can optimize that. And we don't need to consider other brands or or completely other configurations of bikes. We can make it as slim as possible, and I think that's where that came from.
Yeah. So it's the type of battery, because there was a great deal of detail in the presentation 2 days ago that took me back to the times when I was doing physics.
Right.
Talking about the not just the chemistry but the current that can pass through these batteries, because they've got a larger diameter. And it means that they can actually pass more current.
Correct.
That's right. And so I'm not sure if everyone will be familiar with this, but I'm pretty sure that some of our listeners will be familiar with the categorization of certain cells. They might have seen it in the brochures of their e-bikes. There was an 18600 was a standard.
Yeah, 18650.
18650, yeah. All right. And those numbers, they actually mean something. So what does the 18 mean and what does the 650 mean?
So we're talking about the cell type, and what we're really talking about is the dimension.
So it's a physical.
It's a physical dimension. It's nothing about the chemistry inside yet. It's about the physical dimension. And so 18 stands for the 18 millimeter of that cylindrical cell, and 650 stands for 65 millimeters in length.
Yeah, but that's not what Giant is using in these motors, is it? Because you've upgraded. Now, what's the link with Tesla? Because Tesla was mentioned in the presentation.
Right. So we don't have a link with Tesla. We've been working with Panasonic for as long as we've been making e-bikes. So that is a relationship that goes back 25 years to the very first LaFree bikes that we developed long, long time ago. And so our relationship is with Panasonic. And Panasonic has developed, in collaboration with Tesla, the next generation of cell type, which then was the 21700, so a larger volume cell. And the whole industry was fixed on this one dimension for very good reasons, but it was kind of at the end of its development cycle.
Yeah.
And so Panasonic and Tesla then developed the 21700 cell primarily for automobiles, for cars. And with a very similar goal in mind, but not perfectly optimized for e-bikes. It had higher volume, therefore higher capacity, but didn't increase the discharge capacity or that current availability to where you could really have a light e-bike but still power it with full power.
Yeah.
And that's where the project for Panasonic with us came into place to develop a 22700 cell.
So this is the first in the bike industry that we know of that's using this new kind of cell.
Correct.
And that's what's enabled the whole bike to look like it's not an e-bike, but it's packed with capacity. It's packed with 400 watt hours.
Correct.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Now, this is a very geeky question, and might keep this in the podcast. We'll see how it goes. But one of the reasons that the batteries, certainly if we're going back to a Tesla, the Teslas are renowned for the fact that they can discharge so much current from their batteries, they can do that ludicrous mode of 0 to 60 in 3.6 seconds. Now, my understanding is it wasn't developed that way in order to make that acceleration. It's because those larger capacities, it means you can charge them faster. Because if the current comes out fast, it can go in fast. So it was all about fast charging. So with that in mind, the charging of the new bike, can the charger charge the Trans Advanced E Plus? I've lost it again. What do we call it? Called it the Trans
X Elite. Trans X Elite. Let's keep it simple.
Trans X Elite. Can you charge it faster? Does the charge? Is there anything developing in that area?
Yes and no. So we have the 6 amp charger, which is.
Yep. That's beefy.
Quite beefy. That's faster than most e-bike chargers in the market. We have that available, but the difference between the 4 amp and the 6 amp on this battery is not as much as on a full-size battery. Yeah. because still the amount of charge and discharge current you can load this battery with is still smaller on the half-size battery than on the full-size battery.
Yeah.
So the difference between the 4-amp and the 6-amp charger is not as much as it is on a full-size bike. So we found that, you know, it improves it. So it goes, for those who want the numbers, it charges with the 4-amp charger that comes with the bike. It charges to 80% of the battery in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And, in 2.5 hours.
Two
with
and
the
4-amp,
and it does it in 2 hours with the 6-amp. Now, we ship it with the 4-amp. Because we found that cost difference between the 4-amp and the 6-amp, chargers are expensive, and the 6-amp is substantially more expensive, was not worth that
sure.
half an hour. Now, the reason we mentioned 80% is because to preserve the durability of the battery and make sure that, you know, the battery has a very long lifetime, we do a very slow kind of a drip feed.
In the final 20%.
In the final 20%. So the actual full charge is about 4 hours, which is not that impressive, but that first 80 is where...
It's really quick.
Yep.
Anyone with an electric car is going to understand that concept, aren't they? Because when you charge your car up, you get to 80% really quick, and then the last bit takes... And that's just looking after the battery.
Yep.
Brilliant. Okay. Now, I wanted to go back to... That's the battery technology, which is quite clever. But I wanted to go back to the motor again, because this particular... motor does something I've never seen before in any of the other previous motors in terms of its torque, in the fact that all of our listeners will be used to knowing what the torque ratings are of the electric the e-bikes that they're riding. Let me see if I've got this right. Both Shimano and Bosch currently running at 85 newton meters. I think not sure what the specialized Levo full fat motor is running at, but the SL version is 35 newton meters,
right.
Or they are running a Shimano custom motor that's been downgraded, it's not, they would get cross if I called it a downgrade, downrated to 60 newton meters.
Yep.
So all these motors have got fixed torque outputs,
right.
But this motor is different.
A little bit, yes. So what's same about it is it has that same 85 newton meter max output.
Yep.
So that's similar, that's in line with Bosch and Shimano.
Sure.
Other motors out there, so that is that. That's the same. What's unique is that you can completely tune each and every one of the modes individually. So the bike comes with five manual modes and then an automatic mode as well that basically uses those tunes. And those five manual modes, you can completely tune it down to as low as you want to go, to as low as 20 newton meter, which is quite light.
Yeah.
To preserve battery range and
have
a longer ride.
And this is different from just basically turning down the power of the motor. Actually, you can still get that maximum assist, but you're getting it at a lower torque, so it would take, the acceleration would be longer, which is something else that can be tuned.
Right, correct. So we have actually three tunable features in the bike. So you can tune the actual support ratio, so the amount of power that the motor will output in relation to your input, to your effort. So if you're putting in a certain effort, the motor is kicking out from 50% of that amount of power to four times, so 400% of that power. That's one thing. Then the torque is, let's say, the force, the power with which it achieves that support ratio. And then the last thing is an acceleration. So we can tune how quick the motor achieves the full torque, actually. So that's as fast as 200 milliseconds or as slow as 2.5 seconds. So to really dial in, depending on the terrain and how you ride, and really dial in how the motor responds, to have an either very slow and, I would say, controlled response, or have a very snappy, fast response. And it really depends on the terrain.
Sure. So people who've ridden some of the early mountain bikes, and probably e-mountain bikes with the motors, where if you put it in boost mode, the acceleration is so quick that it would actually slide you off the back of the saddle.
Right.
You can actually tune that with this motor.
Yep.
That's very, very impressive. So people who are, of course, all the tuning is done by an app.
Correct.
And so if people like to fiddle with their settings, they're going to absolutely love this motor, aren't they? because there's so many settings that you can actually play with.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, the bike, the idea with the whole bike, not only the motor, but basically all the electronics and yeah, I would almost say gadgetry that goes, I shouldn't say that, I think our marketing team wouldn't like that, but that goes along with this bike, is designed for really two different types of riders in mind. That when you turn the bike on, that you don't actually need any app, you don't need any adjustment. Yep. It has an automatic support mode, it has on top models automatic suspension, it has all these fantastic electronics helping you in your favor, and you don't actually need to set anything, just turn it on and ride. But if you like to, there's a phenomenal range of adjustments that you can make through the app.
Some people are going to absolutely love that. Now, you mentioned automatic suspension adjustment. What we're talking about there is the Fox Life Valve.
Correct.
So I wanted to move on away from the actual motor system, the batteries, to some of the things that come on. Now, there's three levels of this particular model that we've been riding. There's level 3, 2, 1, and 0. We were riding 0.
Correct.
So my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that 0 comes with Live Valve and 1. So the top two models come with Live Valve.
Correct.
Now, Live Valve, it's an e-bike.
Right.
Live Valve is about making riding and suspension super efficient. Right. And so I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening to this going, what, Live Valve on an e-bike?
Right.
What's all that about?
Excellent question. So perhaps the most, there's two key reasons that we wanted to spec Live Valve on this bike and integrate it really into the system, because it plugs in straight into the system. One reason is that it only helps you actually on the flat and when climbing. Like when you're descending, it's an open shock. It's an analog shock at that point. But when the terrain allows, so when it's flat or when you're climbing, it stiffens up a little bit. It closes the compression damping a little bit. And what that does is it helps you sit up a little bit higher in the shock. So instead of sinking into the shock. So you can imagine that when you have to do like load the bike a little bit and hop over like certain things on a climb, or you have a steep section on a bike that doesn't have that compression adjustment, you're really going to squat into the bike. And often you're losing the front wheel, you're losing traction. You, especially with the motor power kicking in, you often can kind of wheelie out and lose your, you know, lose your trail or track that you were pointing for, or worse. So, so I think that is where it really shines, where on steep terrain, on technical tricky areas, Live Valve really helps you to sit a little bit higher in the suspension and keep your front wheel on the ground, keep that traction. And that's where it really shines. So that was the major reason. A secondary reason is we find more and more, especially with these lighter weight e-bikes, that efficiency is not... People tend to think that on an e-bike, efficiency doesn't matter. But in the end, whether it's your power or battery power, you're still losing energy.
Yeah.
And so if you want to have a good range out of that battery, out of both your own and the bike's battery, efficiency still matters, maybe even more so. Because you're using a lot of power, and whether it's from your power or the bike's power, efficiency still matters, especially on a bike with a lighter setup like this.
So it connects. It's one of the things. It's basically about the range. It will extend the range.
Correct.
Right. Now, getting onto the range, because that's interesting. Because the thing is, there's a lot of people who ride e-bikes probably worry about the range. They get range anxiety, just like people who drive electric cars are just full of range anxiety all the time. So, but this. This bike, one of the first things that I did when we got on it was I rode it around the car park, because we all do car park tests and then make an instant decision about whether we like this bike or not.
Yep.
And I just turned the motor off. I wanted to see what it was like to ride it without the motor. And it was shockingly just like a bike.
Right.
So in terms of range anxiety, I didn't really have any when we went out, certainly because the first day there was no chance of us actually running out of power.
Right.
Because I knew I'd be able to pedal this thing.
Right.
If I did. Now, that's because it weighs, the one that we were riding, that's 19 kilos?
19 kilos, yeah.
That's kind of, with a 400 watts hour battery in there,
yep.
That's really quite phenomenal. That's one that makes it one of the lightest e-bikes on the market.
Yeah, yeah. We chose to go a direction that we're not the lightest, and we didn't feel that we needed to, but we wanted to be in that ballpark.
Yeah.
With a configuration that would feel uncompromised in terms of motor output and battery. So yeah, that was the objective. We may not be the absolute lightest, but we're definitely in that range of lightweight, sure, lightweight e-bikes.
Yep. So this is the Trans version. Now, a lot of our listeners should be familiar with the Trans. It's been around for a very long time. The Trans is not the big hardcore bike. Got the Rain for that, and there's an e-bike version of the Rain, isn't there?
Yep.
This is, who is this bike for? What's the market for this bike? What kind of rider is this for?
I think it's a rider that a lot of us can frankly identify with. It's a very much a kind of general do-it-all trail bike. We purposely didn't design it to be like a mini enduro bike. You'd have to change the bike quite a bit to do that. It's a trail bike. It's not a long travel bike. It doesn't have super slack head tube angles or anything like that. It's supposed to be a very friendly, I keep coming back to the word do it all, but
yeah,
it should hold its own on the sense for sure.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be too much of a bike when you're just doing relatively mild pedaling and easier trails out there, because there's a lot of people, especially on e-bikes, that aren't doing crazy aggressive,
sure,
stuff.
Yeah.
And we always found that building a short travel trail bike is not really necessary.
Yeah.
And so we start with a 140, 150 millimeter travel on this level of bikes.
Yeah.
We don't have anything shorter, because I think most consumers would appreciate the added travel.
Yeah.
And so, but we still need to think about consumers that are not doing the craziest, most aggressive trails or the wildest, roughest terrains that are out there. Sure, you know, the bike should be capable in that terrain, but we didn't want to overdo it. We got the Rain E for that.
Sure. So we're where we are right now. We're about, I think, about less than 20 miles away from where Rampage happened. This is not a Rampage bike.
It absolutely isn't. No. That would be a poor decision to go there.
So now, before we get on to prices, and also there is a different model of this bike coming out that's got a larger battery capacity. Before getting that, there is something else about this bike that's very different, and that is the combined one-piece bar and stem.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of people out there, when they hear one-piece bar and stem, are going to go, oh, no. It's fixed. I can't adjust it. I don't want a one-piece bar and stem, because I want to be able to decide my own reach.
Yep.
This is the first. I was kind of blown away by this. This is a one-piece bar and stem, but it's adjustable.
Yep.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we didn't want to just come out with another one-piece bar and stem. There's been plenty on the market, and people who want that can find that. And we only wanted to do that if we could build in some kind of adjustability and meet those demands, because, you know, every one of us does that. You dial in the handlebar roll or the stem length to where you're comfortable on the bike. And so we came up with a design that allows you to adjust both the stem length, so between a 40 and a 45 and the 50 millimeter stem length.
Yep.
So you can adjust the length by 5 millimeter increments. And just by rotating or adding in another sleeve, so by having two sleeves, you can achieve those three positions. And then to adjust the bar roll, so how much forward or backward you want the handlebar to be, we actually angled those spacers. So with that, you can achieve either a minus 3 degree, a zero, or a plus 3 degree bar roll, a handlebar position, basically.
It's worth just for the tape here. Yes, we're talking about a fixed bar and stem that has adjustable handlebar roll. I'm just going to let that sink in for a moment. Because that's Unfortunately, this is audio only. You really need to kind of see this. You know, we'll have all the pictures and all the details over on our website, so go over and check this out. But yeah, this is a fixed bar and stem that actually not just adjusts the reach, but also adjusts the roll of the bars. It's quite revolutionary, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. We are really happy with how that turned out, and feel like we solved the problem. We solved the dilemma of, do I go for something that's lightweight and clean, or do I go for the adjustability? And we managed to put both into one package.
That's impressive. So yes, buy nothing more than just a lot of very clever shims.
Exactly. When you look at it, it's not incredibly complicated.
It isn't when it's all set up and you understand it. I did count. I think I counted it was about 14 shims in the pack. There's 14 pieces.
I think there's
So it's a little daunting at first, but it's not something you're going to be doing all the time. You're going to set this up. It's your ride position. You're going to set it up at the start.
Yep.
And then that's it. You can forget about it after that. So that's quite amazing. So right, we've tackled that. We're now going to go on to there's a different model, because we've been testing just remind me again, because it's gone out of my head again. The Trans X Elite.
Yes.
Yep. And then we've been riding the Zero, so the top model.
The top model. There is another model, which is the what the listeners would be familiar with, the full fat version.
Right.
800 watt hour battery.
Yep.
So we haven't seen that at this launch, have we?
No. That was launched, I believe it was 2 months ago,
yep,
with our first limited edition. So a little bit in honor of our 50-year anniversary. So Giant's been in business now for 50 years, and we did a limited edition that was launched 2 months ago. And that was the first bike, also a Trans X, but that was launched with a new 800 watt hour battery. Yeah.
That's an enormous amount of... Now, the weight on that, though, tell us about the weight of that system, because that's an awful lot of full power, full fat e-bike.
Yep.
But it weighs in at?
4.3 kilograms, if I'm correct, on the battery.
On the battery, yeah. Yep.
And the complete bike starts at 23.0 kilogram. That's the lightest version, and goes up to basically 24, depending on the model.
Sure. So for a full fat, full torque... 800 watt hour powered e-bike, that's in itself, that's really quite impressive to get a weight around about that 23 to 24 kilos.
Yeah, and that was thanks, by the way, and that was that was largely due to the same battery cell development that was done for this bike.
So as technology develops and batteries technology develops, it's really filtering down, trickling down into e-bike technology, e-bike design.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Right. Now, prices. So it won't come as any surprise to the listeners to know that we were at the launch here, as is customary at these launches. We're in the lucky position. We get to ride the top of the line model, which was the Zero model, which comes in, well, you tell me, Joost.
It's still
dollars.
It still boggles my mind, the pricing. But this one comes in at $14,000 US dollars. So wherever you live in the world, that may translate to different prices in different currencies. But yeah, that's arguably an expensive piece of kit.
It is, but I mean, it's got all the tech. It's not just got live valve. It's got access.
It's
wireless.
It's all out. There's access. So the Quark tire whiz on there. There's the zip wheels on there. It's all out for that one.
Yeah. That's it. Now that comes down to the next one down is the one.
Is the one
correct. Still got live valve on it?
Yep.
And the price on that, in dollars, to give people an idea at the moment, is?
That is at 10,000.
10,000.
Yep.
And then the 3 doesn't have live valve.
Doesn't have live valve. And comes
Sorry,
in...
the 2.
The 2.
The 2.
We're on the 2.
Doesn't have live valve.
Yep. Doesn't have live valve. Comes in the US at 7,200.
And then the 3.
And then the 3 is at 6,000 US
and
dollars.
They're all carbon, but the 3...
has an aluminum rear triangle. So all the others are full carbon, including the rear triangle, but the 3, to keep that $6,000 price point, we went for the aluminum rear triangle.
Excellent. And the spec on that, if you want to check out the actual spec, because it is, like I said before, it is November right now, so these things do change. Territories have slightly different specs. By now, we will have the whole spec and all the prices in British pounds, whatever that's worth in January. But go check out the website now if you want to see the full spec of these bikes. So I think that covers about everything. So Joost, thank you so much for spending the time to talk to us. Now I've got one thing left for you. Joost, do you like coffee?
Oh, I'm an absolute coffee addict.
I've got something for you. Right. All right, listeners, just bear with us. This is visual, but I'm going to... I've got this in a bag because it's so strong.
This is getting curious.
Single Track Magazine's
Single Track blend. Deadline Blend.
That's it.
Wonderful.
Can you smell that?
Yeah.
If only they could do smell-o-vision on podcasts. That's freshly roasted.
Beautiful. Yeah, thank you very much.
If you like strong coffee, that's the one for you.
That is going to be absolutely amazing. Thank you very much.
No problem at all. If you're out there, if that's turned you on to getting a cup of coffee, then we do sell this on our website. So go over to see how I've turned this into a bit of an ad at the end. Go and check out our online shop and order yourself some of our Single Track Deadline Blend coffee. But that's all for now. So Joost, thank you so much again. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and thank you for that, Mark. And now we're all back here in the present day, and in the present, not that cold, but definitely not that warm. Another thing from this week that happened that's quite exciting is we've got a new partnership with Cycling UK for our classic rides in the magazine, which I think by the time people are listening to this, the deadline for joining for the print magazine will have passed. But you can always sign up online because you can always access the PDF digital versions of the magazine. But yeah, we've got a new partnership with Cycling UK for our classic rides, which are our route guides. And so we'll be working with them, raising a few eyebrows at some of the missing links that we're not allowed to ride along and put in a route guide because they have a stupid designation or we have stupid access laws and that kind of thing. So Cycling UK has got a big push on off-road cycling this year. And as it turns out, with the last few weeks, the government's made a number of policy decisions that kind of shows that we really need Cycling UK and other access groups to get on the case.
I saw a quote that we've only got access to 8% of the land in the UK.
I've seen that number as well. It's pretty
awful.
Because
you're not, strictly speaking, allowed to walk off the footpath and across the field unless we've got the right to roam, which we have in some areas, more or less in the national parks. Most of the land you can't actually access.
I'm looking forward to this partnership with Cycling UK because we've always been kind of religiously sticking to the established rules of route guides, that whenever we're out on a route guide, it has to be 100% legal. Now, caveat, all of our route guides that we publish will be 100% legal, but we're going to be able, with the help of and support from Cycling UK, point out the places where there's perhaps some dispute or where there are places that don't make sense that the access is as it is. So I'm looking forward to actually raising those issues. That's going to be good.
Yeah. I want to find some like good route examples where like the legal route makes you ride along an A road when there is a perfectly good farm track just to the side of you.
I can give you a good example. There's a bridleway that goes from Ingleborough in the Yorkshire Dales, goes all the way up to the summit of Ingleborough, and it's a bridleway all the way up. And as soon as you get to the summit, it stops being a bridleway and it carries on as a footpath. So if you are on a bike or if you're on a horse, then technically you can ride all the way up to the summit, but you can't continue along the path once you've got to the summit and down the other side into Horton and Ribblesdale. You have to stop at that point, despite the fact the track is right there. You have to stop and you have to turn around and come all the way back. And the reason for that is there's a parish boundary that crosses it. And this is the weird thing in this country. We have parish boundaries where footpaths sometimes just end. Bridleways suddenly turn into footpaths.
So this is the whole thing with how things have been recorded. For people, I am always quite surprised by the fact that a lot of people don't realise that you're not supposed to ride on a footpath or how the designations of access and things work. But once upon a time, the rights of way map was created and it's called the designated map. And that gives you the places that are footpaths, the places that are bridleways, the places that are rights of access, whatever. But if you compare that to what's on the ground, it doesn't always match up. Some of them are completely missing. And some of them, like you say there, when the parish councils helped put this map together, they just made different designations so that things don't join up. Now, the Countryside Rights of Way Act did have a deadline of 2026, whereby anybody that spotted what we would call errors, landowners might say that's just the way it is, you had to put in an application to redesignate and correct those errors and make sure that those historic rights of way were kept. Now, the deadline for doing that was 2026. But, I mean, our local council here in Calderdale, there's applications that go back to the 90s that they haven't been processed. They haven't been looked at even. And so there's no way that all of those applications are going to get done by 2026. The government did, last year, about a year ago, announce that they were going to lift that deadline. And everybody, ramblers, riders, everybody breathed a sigh of relief, like, phew, we can keep plugging away at trying to redesignate these paths. And then this week, government went, nah, actually, I'm going to give you 5 years. So 2031, deadline's back in place. So, kind of back to where we were, because the government said, oh, well, because of COVID delays, you might need a bit more time. We had such delays. It's got nothing to do with COVID. There's no chance of all these applications. I mean, they're huge. The process is like ridiculous and onerous. And the government has said that they're going to make it streamlined and easier. But given that there's been a considerable amount of lobbying with or by the CLA, the Countryside, it's basically Landowners Alliance, I'm slightly concerned that that streamlined process may be stacked against the favour of the public. So yes, something else that happened this week. But it brings us back to the importance of the partnership that we've got with Cycling UK. And if you've got one of those paths near you that doesn't make sense, then go and have a look. Cycling UK's got some good guidance on how to go about designating or applying to redesignate those trails.
Well, I think that's probably all we've got time for this week.
Yes.
So we will leave it there. Next week, maybe next week is the week we get Ross on. Go and check out those news stories on the website that we've been talking about. And we will see you again next week. Or we won't see you. It's a podcast, isn't it? You'll hear from us again next year. Next
that
year?
Sounds like, oh, a my God. Teacher.
Can we do this sign off again?
Stop. Because
I just completely screwed that up.
Yes. I don't know. I think we should just leave it at that.
Shall we leave it in? Because, yeah, makes the lack of toast.
Banged your head when you fell off a chair.
It's the lack of toast and peanut butter. I've got to go and sort that out. Right, we're off now. Goodbye, everybody.
Fix it. All right. Bye, bye everyone. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.